Okay, picture this. You're at the scene of an accident, right? Trying to lend a helping hand, and suddenly, bam, you're injured by another vehicle.
Oh, wow.
Sounds crazy, right?
Yeah.
Like something out of a movie. But this actually happened in a case called Parker v. Domino's Pizza. It's a lawsuit that kind of throws a curveball at the whole world of franchising.
Yeah, this case really makes you think about franchisor-franchise relationships.
Right, like
Yeah.
how much control does the franchisor actually
Yeah,
have?
and when does that control make them responsible for something that goes wrong?
Exactly. So let's set the scene here.
Okay.
We have a Domino's delivery driver named Jeffrey Hoppick. He's employed by a franchisee called J&B Enterprises,
Right.
and he ends up causing a collision.
Okay.
Now, enter the Parkers, good Samaritans. They stop to help the victims of that first accident,
Gotcha.
and then boom, they get hit by another vehicle.
Oh, jeez.
And this is where things get really interesting, legally.
Okay.
The Parkers decide to sue not just the driver and the franchisee, but they go after the big guy, Domino's Pizza
Yeah,
Incorporated.
just Domino's itself.
The real deal, and their argument is that Domino's had so much control over its franchisees
Okay.
that they should be held responsible for what their employee did.
Wow. That's a bold move.
It is.
Makes you wonder if just having a franchise agreement means the company's automatically liable for every little thing that happens.
That's a good question. So is it?
Well, not exactly. The legal principle we're dealing with here is vicarious liability.
Okay.
And it's not as simple as it sounds.
Right.
To figure out if there's vicarious liability, the courts use what they call a right to control test.
Right to control.
Yeah, and this test looks at whether the franchisor had the right to control the methods and the way the work is done,
Okay.
not just the final result.
Gotcha. So not just like did they deliver the pizza on time, but
Exactly.
how they went about doing it.
That's right.
Okay, I see the chessboard here,
Yeah.
but how do you prove that in court?
Right.
Right to control.
Well, in this case, the evidence was actually pretty strong.
What do they have?
You're not going to believe this. Domino's had an 800-page operations manual for its franchisees.
Wait, 800 pages.
800
We're
pages.
talking pizza here, not War and
I
Peace.
know, right?
What could possibly be in 800 pages about making pizza?
Oh, you'd be surprised. It was really detailed stuff about like food prep and store layout, employee uniforms, delivery protocols.
Oh, wow.
It was like they were trying to micromanage everything,
Really?
like down to the type of furniture that the exact placement of ingredients,
Wow.
even the words to use when answering the phone.
Sounds like Domino's wanted a bunch of pizza clones running around.
Yeah, pretty much. But isn't brand consistency a big deal in franchising?
That's true. How can companies balance wanting things to be the same with avoiding legal issues like this?
Right, that's the big question. The courts seem to suggest that Domino's went too far here.
Okay.
This wasn't just a guide, it was a blueprint.
I see.
So the sheer size of the manual, it was seen as proof that Domino's kept a lot of control over how its franchisees operated every day.
So they were basically calling the shots.
Yeah, basically. And get this, the franchise agreement actually called J&B Enterprises an independent contractor.
Oh, so is that just a way to get around it?
That's what you'd think, right?
Yeah.
But courts tend to look beyond the label.
Yeah.
They want to see how the relationship really works.
Gotcha.
And in this case, the court felt that all the details in that 800-page manual
Right.
kind of contradicted the idea of J&B being an independent contractor.
Interesting.
It raised questions about whether they actually had the freedom you'd expect from an independent business.
Okay, this is getting more complicated by the minute.
I know, right?
So with all this control, how did this case even get to court?
Well, Domino's actually tried to get the case dismissed right away.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they asked for a summary judgment.
Okay.
They argued that the franchise agreement clearly stated J&B was an independent contractor.
So Domino's was off the hook.
That's what they thought.
But the court didn't agree.
Not completely. The appellate court actually overturned the trial court's decision.
Oh, wow.
They said there was a genuine question about how much control Domino's really had.
So the court was saying, hold on, there's more to this story.
Exactly.
And this is where things get really interesting.
It does. The appellate court said this case couldn't just be decided on a technicality. There was a big question for a jury to decide.
Which was?
Did Domino's level of control, the one shown by that massive manual,
Right.
make them responsible for what the driver did?
Okay, so everything was set for a jury trial.
Yeah.
But did other franchisers with detailed manuals start to panic?
Right. Like, were they worried they'd be held liable for everything their franchisees did?
Yeah.
Well, the court was careful to say this case didn't mean that.
Okay.
It was all about the level of control.
Uh-huh.
This specific case, with its 800-page micromanagement guide,
yeah,
that was seen as an extreme example.
So it wasn't just about having a manual. It was about how much that manual dictated what the franchise did.
Exactly. The key question was, did the manual essentially turn the franchisee into an extension of the franchisor?
Taking away their independence.
Yeah. And in this case, the court thought there was enough evidence to suggest that might be true with Domino's.
Wow. I can see why this case caused such a stir in the franchise world.
For sure.
So what happened next?
Well, that takes us to the next part of this legal story.
All right. And it's filled with some pretty surprising twists and turns.
Definitely.
So stay tuned, folks, because this deep dive is about to get even more interesting.
Yeah.
So we left off with Domino's facing a jury trial, right?
Right.
It could have been huge for their whole business.
Absolutely. A major turning point.
You'd think they'd just want to settle and avoid that risk.
Yeah. Seems like the logical thing to do.
Especially with a verdict that could set a precedent.
Definitely. But Domino's actually decided to take their chances in court.
Wow. That's gutsy.
Yeah. Very bold move.
What were they thinking?
Hard to say for sure, but it seems like they really wanted to defend their control over the brand.
You think so?
Yeah. Remember, this case wasn't just about the Parkers. It was about protecting their whole franchise model.
That makes it. Okay, so they're headed to trial. What happened?
Well, this is where things get a little unexpected.
What do you mean?
The trial never actually happened.
It didn't.
Nope. Right before it was set to start, Domino's and the Parkers reached a settlement.
A settlement.
A confidential one.
Oh, come on. That is a bit of a letdown.
I know, right?
We don't even get to know who won?
Unfortunately not. Those confidential settlements are pretty common in these kinds of cases.
I guess so, especially with big money and reputations on the line.
Exactly. Both sides can walk away without admitting fault or revealing the terms.
I get it, but it leaves us hanging.
It does.
Did Domino's pay a ton of money to make it go away?
Possibly.
Or did the Parkers realize they didn't have a strong case?
It's hard to know for sure.
So frustrating.
I agree, but the fact that Domino's settled at all does tell us something.
What's that?
They must have been at least a little worried about the trial.
Makes sense.
They were probably weighing the costs of a long legal battle against the potential damage to their finances and their image.
Yeah, I can see that it's still not a good look for Domino's.
Definitely not. Even without all the details, it kind of reinforces the idea that they were maybe too controlling.
Right, even if they didn't say it out loud.
Exactly. And this case had a ripple effect throughout the whole franchise industry.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Other franchisers were suddenly under the microscope.
Wow.
People started looking closely at their manuals and their franchise agreements.
I bet lawyers specializing in franchises were pretty busy.
You can bet on that it led to a lot of legal reassessments.
So was this a wake-up call for franchisers?
I think so.
Did they ditch their detailed manuals and give franchisees more freedom?
Not quite a mass exodus, but definitely a shift in thinking.
How so?
They became more aware of the legal risks of being too controlling.
Makes sense.
That 800-page manual went from a symbol of brand consistency to a potential legal problem.
Interesting.
They realized that trying to make everything uniform could backfire if it looked like they were turning franchisees into puppets.
So did they just tone down their manuals?
It wasn't just about deleting a few pages.
Okay, what was it about then?
It was about changing their whole approach.
Really?
Yeah, they started paying more attention to the language they used, the level of detail they included, and the potential legal problems.
So being more strategic about it.
Exactly.
Did they give franchisees more freedom then?
Some franchisers did. They started adding more flexibility to their agreements.
Okay.
They realized that a one-size-fits-all approach wasn't always the best.
Makes sense.
They acknowledged that franchisees need to adapt to local markets and make some decisions themselves.
So it was less about micromanaging and more about setting clear expectations.
Exactly. Providing guidelines, but not dictating every little thing.
Right. Striking that balance between guidance and freedom.
That's it. What about the franchisees, though?
Yeah. Did they feel like they won something?
I think they saw it as a step in the right direction.
How so?
The case encouraged them to look more closely at their agreements and stand up for their own interests.
Makes sense.
It gave them more power to negotiate for more autonomy.
Okay.
And to push back against demands that they felt were unfair or too intrusive.
So even though the case settled, it still changed the power dynamic.
Absolutely. It created a ripple effect that made both franchisers and franchisees rethink their relationship.
And try to find a better balance.
Exactly.
Okay, so we've gone through all the twists and turns of Parker v. Domino's.
Oh, yeah.
From that huge 800-page manual to the settlement that nobody really knows the details of.
Right, a lot of mystery there.
But the big question remains, what was the lasting impact of all this?
It's fascinating how Parker v. Domino's became this kind of legal Rorschach test for franchising.
What do you mean?
Well, franchisers saw it as a warning sign.
Okay.
Like a reminder that being too controlling can be risky.
Uh-huh. And what about franchisees?
They saw it as a sign of hope.
Hope.
Yeah. Like they might have more legal power than they thought.
Interesting. So did anyone actually win or lose in this case?
It's not that simple. It's more complicated than that.
Okay.
The case really showed that there's this tension at the heart of franchising.
Tension.
Yeah, between the franchisor wanting control and the franchise wanting independence.
That makes sense. Franchisors want to protect their brand, right?
Absolutely. They want to make sure that all their locations are consistent.
Right. You wouldn't want a Domino's pizza in New York tasting totally different from one in California.
Exactly. Customers have expectations when they go to a franchise.
Mm-hmm.
And franchisors use manuals, procedures, sometimes even micromanaging to keep everything uniform.
Okay, but wouldn't all that scrutiny stifle the franchisees?
That's the other side of the argument, right?
Yeah.
Franchisees invest a lot in their businesses. They want to feel like owners, not just employees.
Makes sense.
They want to be able to innovate, adapt to their local market, and make their own decisions.
So Parker v. Domino's really highlighted that balancing act between consistency and independence.
It did, but how did it actually change how franchisers handle their agreements and manuals?
Yeah, that's a good question.
The biggest impact was that they became more aware of the legal risks of having too much control.
I see.
That 800-page manual suddenly seemed like a liability.
Really?
Yeah. They realized that trying to make everything the same could backfire if it looked like they were controlling the franchisees too much.
So did they all get rid of their detailed manuals then?
Not completely.
Okay.
It wasn't about giving up control entirely. It was about being smarter about it.
Smarter how?
They started really looking at their agreements and manuals, paying attention to the language they use, the level of detail, and the potential legal problems.
So being more careful.
Exactly. Did they loosen the reins a bit, though?
Yeah, give franchisees more breathing room.
Some did, yeah. They started adding more flexibility to their agreements.
Okay.
They recognized that a one-size-fits-all approach wasn't always going to work.
Makes
sense. They realized that franchisees needed to be able to adjust to their local markets and make some decisions on their own.
There was less about micromanaging and more about setting clear expectations.
Exactly.
And giving franchisees some freedom to operate.
Right. Yeah. Finding that balance between brand consistency and franchise autonomy.
What about the franchisees, though?
Mm-hmm.
Do they feel like they had more power after Parker v. Domino's?
I think they did. They saw it as a positive step.
How so?
The case encouraged them to really understand their agreements and stand up for themselves. It gave them more power to negotiate for more independence and to push back against unreasonable demands.
So even though the case settled, it still shifted the power dynamic.
It did. It made both franchisors and franchisees rethink their relationship and try to find a better balance.
Wow. So what's the main takeaway for our listeners?
Well, especially for those involved in franchising.
Yeah.
Proceed with caution. Be aware of that need for balance.
Balance between what?
Control and autonomy franchisors need to understand that being too controlling can lead to legal problems.
Okay.
And franchisees need to understand their agreements and stand up for their rights.
That's a good point.
And for everyone, open communication, transparency, and collaboration, those are key for a good and legal franchise relationship.
I like that sometimes the biggest lessons come not from court decisions, but from the changes that happen afterwards.
Absolutely. And as franchising continues to evolve, cases like Parker v. Domino's will continue to shape the legal landscape.
Reminding everyone about the importance of balancing control and autonomy.
Exactly. It's an ongoing process that requires careful thought and a willingness to find common ground.
Well, I think we've explored all the important aspects of this case.
I think so, too.
Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into Parker v. Domino's Pizza.
It was my pleasure.
It's a case that shows sometimes the most important legal battles happen outside the courtroom in the negotiations and agreements that shape entire industries.